Ready?
Go! Hi, everybody. My name is Shay. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to everybody who's new, and happy birthday to the birthday people. I've always wanted to speak at this meeting, and I can't believe I just said that, because I never even wanted to come to meetings before. Let's see. I'm supposed to share my experience, strength, and hope. Right now, I'm really happy that this podium is right here to cover me. And I don't like the microphone, but now that I got that out of the way, I'm really not exactly as nervous as I thought I would be, so this is good. Okay, so my experience. I was a really, really greedy alcoholic. Really greedy. So what I would do was when I went to parties and stuff, I would look around to see who had the 30 packs on the ground, and I would try to like stuff my coat with the beer that was on the ground, so I'd make sure that I got my buzz. And if I was at a kegger party, I would I can't look at Shelly. Okay. Okay, and if I was at a kegger party, I made sure that I was the one who was tapping the keg. Or I made friends with the guy who was tapping the keg. So I always made sure that I drank before I went out. You know, I always had to get the good buzz, and I always drank to get drunk, and I was a blackout drinker too. I grew up in a family where my dad was alcoholic, my mother was not. I have three sisters, and I would say three of us, including myself, are alcoholic and drug addicted, and one of us is, she just got mental problems, so she's got something. So, that calms me down when you guys laugh, so just laugh every once in a while. Thank you. You guys are good. Oh, my God, there's speaker water. I'm so excited. Okay. My dad is alcoholic, and he drank alcoholically, but I didn't really even seem to notice that until I was in my 20s. He would come home from work, and he would want me to mix his drink for him, and I thought that was, like, the most normal thing in the world. And I would mix his 7-and-7s, and those soon became my favorite drink. And I never saw him drunk. I saw him drunk when I was in my 20s, and I became his drinking partner in my 20s. I started drinking rather late compared to the stories that I hear nowadays. Nowadays I hear everybody starts drinking at like 8 and stuff. I'm like, what? Wow. I started drinking, I would say, well, okay, I mixed my dad's drinks when I was 8. That doesn't count, though, I didn't think so. But I started like drinking alcoholically, like to get drunk, to get an effect, when I was probably about 14 or 15. And I didn't drink because I was trying to mask anything. I didn't drink because I had a bad childhood, or I was molested, or I was raped. I just simply liked the effect that alcohol had on me. It made things extra fun. And you'll soon learn as my little spiel goes on that fun was really pretty much the main priority in my life. Fun, and I had to make sure I was always tan too. So I get embarrassed that I say that now, but it still applies today. Okay, so I liked all the people who were doing illegal things. And those were the people I was totally attracted to, and those are the people that seemed to be attracted to me. So I was friends with the girls in high school that, like, got pregnant and partied and ran away from home and stayed out late. And I was, like, a stoner in high school. Drugs were a really, really big part of my story, but out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not going to touch too much on that. But everything started with alcohol and it ended with alcohol. Alcohol is definitely my drug of choice. I do a drunk log too, because for me, I'm one of those alcoholics who forgets really, really easily what it was like. I have to remind myself. So it's like, it works, it helps me work my program. If I don't help anybody here, it helps me, keeps me sober at least a couple more days. Okay, my sobriety date is January 5th, 2002. And so I just celebrated 7 years last month. And, 7 sounds so much older than 6, by the way. It's pretty exciting crap, let me tell you. Okay, so what qualifies in getting me here is the drinking and blacking out. Instantly started getting in trouble right when I drank. Cheating, I was a liar, definitely a huge cheater. wasn't so much a thief, but I'd hang out with the people who were thieves. So I would help them kind of steal. I was kind of like an accomplice. But, you know, I figured if I wasn't doing it, I wasn't guilty of it. So I fresh out of high school, I got in trouble for the first time for a controlled substance when I was 21. And I thought, God, I got in trouble really late compared to everybody else, because everybody else was getting in trouble and going to juvenile hall. Everybody else. Everybody who I hung out with. So I got in trouble for that, and I had to go to jail, and I smoked pot on my lunch, and the cop pulled me over, and he said, "I pulled you over because you were swerving." And I thought, how dare he, you know? And then he found speed in my wallet, and I told him the standard answer, that's not mine. And he said, "Well, whoever's it is, you're going to jail for it." And I remember thinking, like, crap, everybody's gone to jail and I finally get to go. Like, okay, so I'm excited to go to jail, kind of, but kind of scared. And the deputies are trying to be kind of mean to me, and they're kind of trying to scare me. And they're like, "Oh, the girls are going to like you." And I was thinking, like, oh, my God, I'm in jail. And I remembered I had my tongue pierced, and I was really concerned about having to take the piercing out of my tongue. I was like, oh, my God, it's going to close up. Like, I'm not even tripping out that I'm in jail or anything. I don't want my tongue to close up. And so, and I'm kind of worried. It was lunchtime. I got arrested on my lunch hour, and I was worried about what time I was going to get out so I could go out that night. And really, I'm serious, too. Okay, so I had to drink my speaker water. It makes me feel really cool. Okay, hang on. Super thirsty. Okay, you guys get ready. I'm a talker. So I'm in jail, and I'm thinking, like, God, when am I going to get out? And they don't have clocks in there. Can you believe that? That's totally bugs. And so I get out at about 10 o'clock at night, and that's perfect because I usually start hitting the bars at about 10:30. And I go to this bar in Dana Point that some of you who around my age and older remember, the Villa in Dana Point, and that place was the place to go, let me tell you. And I showed up at the Villa, and I told everybody, oh, my God, I just got out of jail. Like, I wasn't even fazed by it, you know? A lot of the other people in there were, like, crying and upset, you know, and I'm just like, oh, my God, my tongue is closing up. And so so I got out, and I got to the bar, and I told everybody, oh, my God, I went to jail. Can you believe it? Da-da-da-da-da. Didn't even affect me. Didn't even think I even had a problem or anything. Later on, I got in trouble again for the same thing, controlled substance. This time, that second time, they usually kind of keep you a little longer. So they kept me, and they offered me drug court. And drug court for me, drug court was really new back then. This was 15, maybe 18 years ago. It was brand new, and I don't know who knows about drug court, but it's really strict. And they make you go to meetings every day. They make you get a sponsor. That was horrifying right there. They have you do a one-on-one session. They tell me to dress appropriately. Like, that was a toughie, too. I had to stay sober, too. I was not staying sober. I had to wear a patch, and what I would do is I would take the patch off and stick it on a piece of saran wrap and then go and, you know, get loaded the whole week and then put it back on. And then they got wise to that, and they started testing you every 3 days, so I couldn't really do that anymore. So I was drinking a lot, because drinking was legal, and they kind of, I didn't think it was a drug, so I drank a lot. And they said you had to get a job, and I got this job where I had to get up at like 5 or 6 in the morning and serve breakfast, and it was tough getting up to that job at 5 or 6 in the morning when you're drinking till like 2 or 3 in the morning. So I couldn't really get there on time, and I didn't really do a really good job. And so I get there, and the boss, he was kind of getting mad at me sometimes, you know? And I don't even know what I served the people. How I did a really bad job, okay? And so you guys are great. I did a bad job, and I didn't keep the job very long. So during drug court, you kind of can't really get in trouble. You have to do good. And I'm not doing really good. And so what happens is let me think of what order it was. Okay, I'm dating this guy and he does heroin, and I did speed, so I thought, I'm doing so good because I'm dating a guy who does heroin, and I'm not really tempted, you know, because I don't do heroin. So I'm like, I'm doing good, and he's drinking. He's like, well, I've never gone out with a girl who's never wanted to do drugs before, and I'm like, see, I am doing good, you know. So we're at his house, and his mom sells pot, like, abundantly, and the house gets raided while we're there, and so I go to jail. I get a probation violation, and I go to jail, and see, jail to me still is fun, because all my friends are there, and I'm, like, thinking, like, you know, high five on the glass, you know, and whatever, and I'm in handcuffs, you know, and it was just, it just didn't really affect me. It was, like, a fun thing at the time, and I didn't stay very long, so I didn't lose my tan, you know, so I'm in jail. I do the probation violation. They keep me there for 2 weeks. Okay, and mind you, it was very important that I had fun, and I did not like to miss out on things at all. So 2 weeks, you can imagine, I missed out on a lot of activity, extracurricular activities, lots of bar activities, and I didn't like that 2 weeks in there, and I kind of, my tan kind of faded out a little bit. So I'm in there for 2 weeks, and I'm like, wow, this jail thing sort of sucks. The first couple days, it's cool. 2 weeks after that, not so cool. So, okay, I want to do the drunk-a-log, but I want to make sure I get sober and talk about sobriety, because I like to talk about solution and sobriety, but I know the drunk-a-log is, like, it's kind of funny. Not really, but it is. Okay, so, I'm in the jail, they let me out, and that's, like, 2 weeks I'm in the drug court. About 2 weeks later, I get my first DUI. And I got violated again, and got to go to jail for 2 more weeks. And I'm like, okay, 2 weeks, that's kind of a lot of missing out. It's summertime too, that's not good. Hot summertime beer, not good. So I didn't like that. And so then within a period of, I think, 6 weeks, I just decided I couldn't do the drug court anymore, because the meetings and taking the patch off and taking it on and then actually getting drug tested, and it was kind of getting in the way of my drinking, you know. And so I just said, screw it, I'm just going to do drugs again. So I did drugs, and I tested dirty, and I went to jail again. And I'm in jail, and they're going to keep me a little longer than 2 weeks this time, so I'm not happy about that. And my friends are sending me letters telling me how much fun they're having and stuff, and I don't really like that too much either. And they're... you know, so it's kind of affected me, but still there's no problem. I still don't really have a problem. It's these darn cops that are bugging me, you know. The judge who keeps sending me the drug court. The drug court is just the most screwed thing in the whole entire world, you know. And so so they keep me in jail, and I remember I'm going up there, and I'm getting, like, sentenced to figure out I have the opportunity, I think it's, like, doom, to either continue on with the drug court or to do jail for 6 months. And, okay, so I don't live with my mom. I think I'm about 24 years old, and, whoa, sorry. I'm about 24 years old, and my mom doesn't know I'm getting in trouble all the time. So I'm in the courthouse, and I'm in that little cage, and I got my little blue jumpsuit on, I got my little handcuffs on, I'm up there, and there is my mom in the courtroom. And she is, like, freaking the F out, okay? She... for a mom. Okay, she's not seen her baby in handcuffs before, and... I have not felt any shame or guilt, remorse, or felt I've done anything wrong. And instantly I feel like, oh my God, crap, my mom is here. They offer me, you know, you can do your 6 months or you can continue drug court. And she's waving at the judge, excuse me, excuse me. I don't know who's been to court or who's been to jail or whatever, but you don't interrupt court. And she's trying to get the bailiff's attention. You know, he's got a gun, mom, you know. And she's trying to get the judge and everything, and the judge feels sorry for her. The judge is really sweet and nice. I think she's the devil, though. And so she lets my mom come up and talk to her, and my mom's like, please, can I go talk to her? And she lets her go up, and I don't know who knows that either, but they don't let you go up to the cage and talk to you either. So mom's up there, and she's crying, and then she's making me mad is what she's doing, but really I'm feeling bad. And so it's easier for me to feel pissed off than to feel sad. So I instantly go into anger mode, like, how dare she make me feel bad? And she says, please, please, please continue on with the drug court. Please do not go to jail and take the 6 months. Please, I'll help you. I'll do whatever. And I'm like, Mom, I can't do it. You know, I wasn't ready. She said, please, Shay, I'm begging you. And I said, I'm sorry. I'm going to take the jail time. And 6 months, okay, some white-ass skin I came out with. So I take the jail time. Sorry about the cussing. I'm trying to not cuss. I have a baby and a trucker mouth. So I do the 6 months. I come out and I go and I live with my mom, and that's quite humbling. I haven't lived with my mom in years. I live with my mom, and once again, I instantly start drinking again because I don't have a problem. Drugs were my problem. I went to drug court. Alcohol is not a drug. I didn't get that DUI. That didn't count. That was an accident. That was the cop. Whatever. So I live with mom. I'm drinking with mom. Mom thinks that drinking's fine. She's fine. She's buying me six packs. She's like, have fun, honey. You know, I'm going out and stuff, and I am instantly... I think I told you, but I'm attracted to the people that are doing illegal things. So I like the guys who have, like, the tattoos from, like, here to their toes, and still do. And and fun. It's very important that I have fun, okay? So I'm having fun. I'm going out a lot, and I stay out of trouble for a little while. I have many parolee boyfriends, and many, many, many. And all during this time, there is a guy who's in and out of my life since I was about 12 years old, and his name is Travis. And Travis was like the love of my life in seventh grade, and I had him like written all over my diary. I love Travis, you know. And I did. I loved him. I thought he was the greatest thing, and he didn't even know I was alive. And he was the bad kid too. Like in ninth grade, you know, we went to high school. He had like a mohawk, and he would ditch school, and he wore combat boots, and he smoked. And you know, in seventh grade, he was just starting to get bad. And of course, I instantly liked him. And so he's like kind of in and out of my life through my 20s. Like we run into each other at tweaker houses and stuff, and you know, we just run into each other at random places. And I'm like, there's Travis, you know. And I see him at this tweaker house, and I'm like thinking like, oh my god. Love, you know, and so I see him there, and we like hook up, we hang out for a few weeks, and then he's like such a hardcore tweaker, I can't even hang. So I'm just like, you are wacko, dude. So we part ways, and then a couple more times throughout the 20s, we try it again for whatever reason, and so I mention him because he's very instrumental in my sobriety. So I'm running in and out with Travis. I'm running into places with Travis everywhere, like at different places, and hanging out with the parolee boyfriends, and I go to jail again for my second DUI. I'm 27 years old, second DUI. My parolee boyfriend is trying to hook up with my best friend while I'm in jail. I'm like screaming. I remember they made me make my one phone call, and all I want to tell him is, you better not touch her. You know, these are the kind of people that I would have in my life. Okay, so I mean, like I told you, I was a cheater and a liar, and probably like kind of would help you still, like be an accomplice. And these are the people that were my boyfriends and my friends. Most of my friends were like that too. My friends were, you know, if you haven't heard the terminology, they'd steal your dope and help you look for it. Those were my friends. And I've woken up to them doing that too. And so I kind of thought that was just how everybody was though. I mean, everybody that I hung out with was like that. And so I just still didn't really see that much of a problem. So I got the second DUI, and I had just gotten a job, a promotion at a grocery store. I was working at a grocery store. I started off as a bagger. God willing, I don't know how, but I got promoted up into like kind of management, stocking, or they gave me a title that said management, and it made me feel really good. And then I just got promoted to like a general manager at Ralph's. And so I go to jail, and they're going to keep me because it's my second DUI, and they're going to keep me for 30 days. So I am freaking like, oh my God, I'm going to like show up to my job. I'm not going to show up to my job, my new promotion. Like, what am I going to do? So I'm calling who I consider my friends to bail me out. And one of them, I don't know, she calls up my dad and conjures up the money and bails me out. And I'm like thinking, you know how, I don't know who's been to jail and who hasn't, but you think, I'm never going to do this again. I'm never going to get in trouble again. And that's all I was thinking, because I'm going to be good from now on. But what do I do when I first get out? I have a drink. And because that's not the problem. It's just I'm not going to drink and drive now. So, and I always drove better when I drank, in case, you know, didn't you all? And I played pool better, too. I get the DUI, I get out of jail, and I start the job, and it's at this Ralph's here in San Clemente. And they want me to get up really early to work. And some days at 3 and 4 in the morning, and some days I have to be there at 5. And like I said, I get home at 2, 3 in the morning. It's not a lot of sleep. I'm usually still buzzed. And so I start this job on not a very good foot. And I'm showing up there kind of late and not doing my best, really hungover, feeling really crappy most of the time. And I'm just starting this job, and I'm ordering, and I miss, like, you have to order for the store at a certain time, and I miss the orders, and people are ordering it for me. No, they hate me there. They basically hate me there, but for some reason, the store director loves me, and she wants to party with me, and she does. She starts drinking with me and hanging out with me. She even, like, dated my dad for a minute. Hope she's not here. So she loves me, so she kind of lets me get away with it, you know, and I'm thinking, like, as long as I'm good with her, you know, whatever, and it kind of bugs me that everybody hates me at the work, but not enough where I'm going to, you know, change or do anything about it, and so, like, whatever, you know, they're all just not having fun, so, remember, fun is the name of the game, so, I'm showing up to this job not doing so hot, and meanwhile, Travis enters again into the life, and he shows up, and I think I'm about 27 or 28, and we start dating, and I'm just drinking very heavily again. He's like, God, you know, you were kind of better when you were a tweaker. Like, you drink a lot. You have a drinking problem. And I thought, oh, no, you're the one with the problem, dude. And, you know, just, I never had the problem. So, we do the next indicated step. We move in together because, you know, that's what people do who are alcoholics and tweakers. They don't really think about, you know, that you're so, everything's so blocked off from alcohol. You just, you don't even see how the relationship really is. And the relationship with us, it wasn't, I wouldn't say volatile, but I would say a little verbal abusive sometimes, some name calling, but once again, I just kind of thought that was normal too. So we didn't actually beat the crap out of each other, but we almost did several times. And it probably would have become like that. And so so we lived together, and I'm showing up at work, and he's like, you know what, I work 6 days a week, and on the day, I drink pretty much every day, but the day off, it's like, it's on. And, you know, just a little history on that, like, when we would go to bars, like, we would go to shows all the time, punk rock shows, and he, like, would never be able to find me. He would have, like, no idea where I was, and then he'd get mad at me, and then he would tell me the next day that he got mad at me. I wouldn't even remember. I was like, really? You know, was I having fun at least? You know? And so, so, you know, and sometimes, like, after work, as I got off work, like, at 12, I'd go to the bar, and I would say, we're just going to go in for a pitcher, just one pitcher. And we go in, and, you know, the bartender always knew me, so she's like, Shay, you're not going to have another pitcher? And I'm like, well, I don't have any money. You know, you pull that. And she's like, well, I'll buy it for you. And I'm like, okay, I'm here. And so he would end up getting, like, pissed off at me, because he's like, you said you'd have one pitcher, and you're like plastered to the seat. You know, he like physically actually removed me from the seat one time, and I just jumped out of his arms and went back to the seat again, because, you know, I had a pitcher. But, you know, it was a lot of that. And so what happens is we decided that we were going to get married, and we got okay, I can drink water because you guys are laughing. Speaker water. So I'm a speaker. Okay, so we get married, and okay, mind you, this is like a 20-year relationship. I'm 30 years old. My wedding, I'm having this big, huge, like, two-kegger wedding. Big, big, big wedding. Travis is inviting everybody without invitations. I don't know that he's doing this. He's just, hey, I'm getting married on Saturday. Show up. I'm like, so it was a big, big one. Thank God. We had, like, a community center. So I remember we got into it. My wedding day was really awesome. It was, like, one of the best days of my life. It was a beautiful day. Very excited about getting married, not nervous about it at all. I remembered I thought it was like a really big deal that I didn't drink before my wedding. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna be sober for the wedding. I'm not gonna have one beer. That's huge. And so we get married, and everything's great, and we're married for a couple months, and it's around like November time, and we live on Del Mar, and we have my best friend and her boyfriend over, and we're drinking, we're having a little get-together, and he wants to go up and see the lights on Del Mar. And I'm thinking, like, I don't want to see any lights. You know, I can't bring my beer with me. We're not in Vegas. And so I don't really want to go check out the lights in Del Mar, but he does. So I'm thinking, Del Mar. Oh, there's a bar at the top of the street. I'll go look at the lights. So we go up and we look at the lights, and I said, well, let's just stop in the bar really fast. He's like, no, let's go back in. I'm like, no, there's a bar right there. We're just going to stop in. So we stop in. Yeah. And next thing, okay, so a little bit about Travis. He's on parole, of course. And he's on parole for violent crime. Trying not to throw him under the bus too much here. So he kind of likes to fight a lot of people sometimes. And so, not me, but likes to fight. And next thing I know, there's somebody like kind of, somebody from my grocery store who's trying to buy me drinks. And we're like all excited because we're saying husband, wife. This is my husband. He's all, this is my wife. We're doing all that. And we're all excited. We do it like overly do it too many times. And so he doesn't like somebody buying his wife a drink. And so he beats the crap out of the dude. Next thing I look over and the guy's like on the ground, bloody. And I'm like, oh, crap. Buzzkill. So, okay, so I'm one of those alcoholics who, like, if I'm mad, like, I need to, let's drink, you know? And if I'm super happy, like, let's drink, you know? And if I'm sad, like, I have to have a drink. And so I'm pissed, you know, because he's on parole, and I'm thinking, like, crap, he's going to get in trouble again, and now we have to leave, too, you know, out onto it. I'm serious. I was, like, pissed off that we had to leave. And so we leave, and we walk home, and we go, and we get a bunch of vodka. Vodka's not even my drink, but I'm thinking, like, change it up a little bit because I'm mad. So we get vodka, and I instantly black out. We drink that, and the only thing that I remember the rest of that night was a lot of cop cars, like he murdered somebody, like lots of cop cars up and down the street, and don't remember anything else after that. Woke up 2 hours late for work, wondering, like, where's Travis? And the neighbors told me that he went away, and it all started coming back to me. So my husband, who supports me and pays all the bills and totally, like, takes care of everything, is gone, and I'm scared. And I'm thinking, crap, I'm newly married, you know? This is not how it's supposed to go. He's in jail, and I go to work, and they tell me that I need to go home because I showed up late. And I'm like, why do we show up late? And she says, you need to go home because everybody's getting mad at you, and you need to go home and think about what it is that you want to do with your job. And so a couple days later, it's Thanksgiving, and I'm supposed to be there at 6, and I had drank the night before, and I got there like at, I think, 6:30 or 7 or something like that, and they sent me home again. And I'm like, what the heck? I've been doing this for 3 years. Now they're like going to start cracking down. This is the worst time. Don't they know that Travis is in jail, and I am sad, and I am a victim, and poor me, you know? And that's how I was, like, poor me. And so they sent me home again, and my boss, the one that supposedly loves me, because I'm thinking, that freaking boss, you know, how dare she? And she says, you know, you need to get it together. You need to figure out what it is you're going to do, or you're going to lose your job. And I'm scared. And so this is going to come as a surprise, but Travis and I went to premarital counseling before we got married. And we went to premarital counseling for the volatile stuff. And so I went and saw the counselor, and a lot of the times when we would have counseling, she would say, did you ever think, like, not to drink? And I was like, no, I would never think that. It's him, or it's this, or it's that. You know, it's not that, because I wouldn't have any fun. And I really, that's all I ever thought about was, how was I going to have fun if I didn't drink? There's no fun after not drinking. And so, okay, I need to hurry up and get sober. So the counselor goes there and says, why don't you, I tell her about the work thing, and she says, why don't you try this rehab? I'm like, rehab? She says, try this rehab, and just try it for a day and see if you like it. And I'm like, okay. And she says, your job will probably, be there if you do this. So I tell my boss, and she says, yeah, go ahead, try that, and we'll support you. So I go to this outpatient place. They let me go to work, and I show up there, and all they let me do is cry about Travis, and that's all I want to do. I don't want to talk about alcohol. I don't want to talk about a problem or anything. So I cry about Travis the whole time, and they let me do it. I'll come back again, you know? So I come back the next day, and I stayed sober that day. And they told me to get a sponsor, and I'm like, sponsor, schmonsor, whatever. And I don't know, I eventually did that. I went to this outpatient place, and like I said, they just let me talk there, and I ended up staying there for about 3 months and went to work and showed up on time. And the thing that I noticed was, wow, I actually felt okay when I showed up to work, and I showed up on time, so that was kind of cool. You know, and they weren't really nice to me still, but they were kind of nice, you know. They were stoked that I was there, and they didn't have to do my job. And so I show up, and I'm doing okay, and I'm kind of like, this is cool. You know, I'm just going to do this until I'm, like, back in good graces with the boss, you know? And meanwhile, I'm visiting Travis in jail every weekend, every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, crying. It's like seriously, it was, like, one of the worst times of my life. And I'm very dramatic, too. And so I'm very new, so I'm extra dramatic. But I don't think I'm being dramatic. I think, like, just poor me, you know? Poor me. I start going to these meetings, and this was like one of my first meetings. I went to this meeting for my first 2.5 years of sobriety, and I was horrified to be in a meeting on a Friday night. I'm telling you, I would come home at 9:30, and I was like, oh my God, I'm home. And I would like judge everybody, and I would try to find everything that was wrong with everybody. And I'm just being honest, I feel bad now, but I mean, it was just the way it was. I did not want to be here. I did not want to go to meetings. I did not want to stay sober. This is a temporary thing. Oh crap. Okay, thanks. She has to go watch my baby. I didn't want to be here. So I'm showing up to these meetings and I'm doing as I'm told and I get a sponsor. And I asked this lady, I didn't ask her because she had something that I wanted or anything like that. I knew her because she was a friend of Travis's. And I was too scared to ask anybody else at this Tuesday women's meeting that I went to. So I'm at this meeting and I asked this lady, her name is Mary, and I said, hey, would you be my temporary sponsor? And she says, well, that would mean that you're a temporary alcoholic. And I thought, oh, crap, what have I gotten into? Like, why am I talking to her right now? Like, oh, she's a doozy. So I said, okay, well, will you be my permanent sponsor then? And she says, yeah. And then she said, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I said, you know, instantly, yeah. I didn't really know what that entailed when she said that to me. Seemed like a simple question. And so so she kind of started getting me doing a program. We started meeting once a week. She told me how many meetings I had to go to. I went to a meeting every single day. She forced me to share in meetings. I do not like to share in meetings. She would physically raise my hand and make me share in meetings. That's how much I don't like to do it. She made me call 2 women a night, not 3, but 2. And there's ladies over here. They got to call 3. I had to call 2 women a night, and I didn't know. I was like, be going down the phone list thinking, like, I don't know who these people are. It was very uncomfortable for me. And then I thought, wow, this whole sobriety thing is really uncomfortable and really awkward. Like, it was so easy. You know, you go and drink with somebody all night long, you're instant friends, you know, and it's not like that in sobriety. It takes a long time to develop friendships. And I thought, I don't know about the sobriety thing. This is, like, not so cool. And then, like, she forced me to go to, like, the dinners after the meetings. She'd force me to go to coffee afterwards. And I do say forced. I didn't really think it was very fun. And like I said, fun was the most important thing. So everybody would be like, oh, my God, that was so fun, hon. I'm like, this isn't fun. You know, that's what I was doing. Like, I remember we all went to, like, Boomers, like, a whole bunch of people, like, kind of like my age, all went to Boomers, and we played, like, miniature golf, and I'm just thinking, like, it'd be so much better if I was Buzz. You know, I was just, like, I was miserable, and I was fighting it. I was not open to trying to enjoy myself or be happy. I just didn't want to be affiliated with you people. And I instantly became friends with the people that had the tattoos that were on parole, and I found out soon enough that not all of them, I'm not going to stereotype them, but a lot of them did stay sober, so that was kind of hard. And I'm visiting Travis, and I'm doing what I'm told, and I'm start working my steps with her, and I'm really scared that I'm going to change. I'm like, I'm going to be this boring, like, nerd. And so, because everybody says, you're going to change so much when you do your steps, and I'm thinking, like, oh, God, I don't want to change. Oh, my God. And so maybe that was why I was fighting it or whatever, you know. But so I'm doing my steps to this lady, and I'm not really telling her the truth all the time because I don't really trust her, because I don't know how to trust anybody, because I've never really had very trustworthy people in my life. And so she's kind of like my practice board, you know. And what happens is she still, like, lets me come back. She still, like, takes my phone call. She calls me back, like, instantly when I call her. And she's, like, really there for me, my sponsor. And I'm thinking, like, well, this is kind of cool. And she's kind of like, she lets me whine about Travis a little bit and do my thing. And I'm thinking, well, this isn't so bad. You know, she's a really nice lady, and she's, you know, she's there for me, which was a nice change. And so, I don't know, I kind of developed, like, a really intimate relationship with her. And what I found out later was, like, that carried on to my other relationships with other people, because, like, she was my practice, you know, relationship, and then I, like, got to learn how to have relationships with other people. And it was hard doing that sober, really awkward and really uncomfortable for me, my experience. And so she had me start praying too, and I was raised Catholic, and not that Catholicism is like shows a condemning God, but my mom would always say, you know, if you do that, God's going to get you. She'd always say that to me. And so, like, you know, I don't like to say that that was embedded in my head, but it kind of was, you know. I was kind of like, oh God, you know, if I don't do good, God's going to get me. And so I kind of just didn't really want to pray when she told me to pray. And she said, just do it anyway. This is, you know, this isn't a religious program. This is a spiritual program. And I'm like, okay, that works. And so, you know, I'm showing up to these meetings and I'm kind of doing the thing. And I don't know why, but I'm doing what she says, you know. And before that, you know, I went to jail and the judge always told me what to do, and I didn't like that. And the deputy always told me what to do, and drug court always told me what to do. Now she's telling me what to do. And I'm doing what she says. And I don't know, like somewhere, like I don't know what month it was, but somewhere along the lines, I just decided to stop doing things Shay's way, my way, and did things her way. And I just decided to just go gung-ho. I just did everything she told me to do. And I, like, got conformed to an Alcoholics Anonymous little Nazi person. And so, you know, and what I found out, too, is I was so into drinking and the scene and the social aspect of it that I had to, like, just do the complete opposite with Alcoholics Anonymous and just get really into this program, get really active, and just not do half measures or, oh, I'll call one woman that day, or oh, I'll skip a couple days, or I'll work that step, but I don't want to do that step, or I'll tell the truth about this, but not that. And she was really adamant about the honesty thing, and that was, like, not a very strong characteristic of mine. And but, like, weird stuff. Like, she would say, you know, if somebody calls and you don't pick up, don't make up a reason why you don't pick up. And I always did that. I'd always say, oh, sorry, I was getting the groceries out, these groceries in my hand, and like, the door was open, and a cat ran into my house, and da-da-da, you know. I would, like, I don't know, it was so unnecessary. Instead, I would just say, sorry, I didn't make it to the phone in time, or sorry, I was busy. Like, oh, how hard is it to tell the truth? But it just, lies just flew out of my mouth all the time. And she taught me things like that, you know. I didn't even think that was like a form of dishonesty. And then the dishonesty by omission, I was really good at that too. And she taught me that that was dishonest too. And so, you know, she just taught me a lot of things that you know, anybody who has common sense knows, but you're just not doing that your whole entire life. So it's like this complete role reversal. So this change thing is happening to me. I guess a lot of the women told me when I took my birthday that I was very angry when I came in. I was really approachable. A lot of them told me that I wasn't. And I don't know. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous now, and I can really, really say that with, like, honesty. I do still lie sometimes. I'm not perfect. I don't run a perfect program. When I do, I try not to repeat the behavior again, though. Or I'll usually say, you know what, I just lied. I usually, like, I've had to do that one a couple times. And I do it really quickly, you know. It's, like, pretty quick. I notice that a lot of my old behavior, it doesn't happen as often anymore, and the times are further and further in between. So that's cool, you know. In this program, you know, the cliches used to freaking kill me, I swear. Easy does it, one day at a time. Progress, not perfection. But this is, it's progress, not perfection. And I was making some progress, and I was feeling pretty good about myself. I was getting all lit up on AA. And I'm visiting Travis, and I got to tell you what happened to him. So around my 10th month of sobriety, I finished my steps, and my sponsor said, I don't want you to make any decisions until you get a year or finish your steps. Travis just happened to get sentenced to 8 years. And yeah, that's a big amount of time. And he's going to do seven years, 9 months of it, no half time. because he's got it like that. And so I decided that I didn't know what he was going to be like when he got out. I didn't know what he was going to be like when he was in. And then I was battling with, for better or for worse, I didn't know what to do. But I knew that I thought I had to give this sobriety thing a chance, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to do it with him. And that sounds awful when I say it like that. It was a really painful decision that I made, but I decided that I wasn't going to stay married to him. And so I told him that, and it wasn't reciprocated very well. And he was very angry and had expected me to stay with him for that 8 years, and I just couldn't do it. And so what I instantly did was, I had a friend in sobriety, and I instantly jumped into a relationship with him, fresh from that, because I didn't want to feel any sadness or pain or whatever. And so I would have to say honestly that relationship didn't start out to the best, like, you know how you're all like, la, rainbows and birds and everything. Like, the first 4 months, it wasn't like that. Maybe for him it was, but I'm not saying that it was or not. I'm just saying for me, it was difficult. I was trying to cover up my pain from the Travis relationship with this. And he was a very, very good friend to me, and he was really good to me. And, you know, I slowly worked through my stuff with the Travis thing, and dated this guy, and we dated for, I want to say, about a year and a half. And then he's also in the program. And I had made so many friends in this program. My Tuesday women's meeting, God, they were phenomenal. And I thought, like, oh my God, I'm friends with women that I would never even go up and talk to, you know? I mean, it's amazing. You know, and I'm not going to sit there and lie and tell you that life doesn't happen and everything's wonderful. My life is wonderful today, because it's not always wonderful. You know, stuff still happens. Life goes on. My life is good today. I don't know about tomorrow, but it's different every day. Today is a really good day. I'm almost done. That makes it really good. I'm going to stay sober, probably. Pretty sure I'm going to stay sober tonight. Okay, so I ended up marrying the guy. His name's Rick. A lot of people know him. A lot of his friends are in the back, and my friend. Thanks, guys, for coming. We have worked really, really hard at making our relationship what it is today. We both came from the same background, so we didn't really know how to do relationships either. It was new. You know, I had friendships. Now I had to do a relationship, and it was really rocky. And a lot of insecurity for me, a lot of jealousy. You know, you take away my alcohol, and I'm a jealous, insecure woman. And he must have loved me, because he stayed with me, you know. And so we've been married a little over 4 years now, and we have a little baby boy, and that's a miracle, because I always thought that, oh my God, I could never get pregnant because I could never stay sober during that 9 months. Never. I would have to drink. And so, like, I am a sober mom. It took me a long time to figure out what I liked to do in sobriety, like what my interests were and what made me happy. I started sponsoring probably my first year, like really like hardcore, probably my second. And I've been sponsoring women ever since. I have 6 women that allow me to be their sponsor. And I say allow because it is a privilege that they actually allow me into their lives and let me help them. And I'm excited because 5 out of the 6 are here. And the 6th one, she's too new. She couldn't make it. But that so keeps me grounded. Oh, sponsoring women is like the greatest thing. This seems to be the best year. Well, actually, last year was probably the best year. And it keeps getting better, and that totally keeps me sober. I'm a busy mom. I'll have to say that motherhood totally blindsided me. I had no idea what I was in for. And I actually suffered some postpartum, and was like in a bad way with the postpartum thing. And I had visions of what I thought motherhood was supposed to be like. I thought I was going to be happy and just running around with my child, and like I had this postpartum thing. And I actually actually entertained, you know, the idea of having a drink. You know, there's been many a time in my 7 years that it has been a good moment to take a drink, and I have not done it. And that was probably the closest that I ever came. And what happened was, a lot of the women from my Tuesday women's meeting came to my house and brought me a meeting. And I was on the phone like nonstop. The book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there is an answer to every problem in that book. Every situation in life, there is an answer to in that book. I've worked my steps 3 times now. I just finished them for the 3rd time. I've had the same sponsor. She moved away for a little while. I had 2 other sponsors for a little while. She sponsors me long distance. I went up to Alaska. She lives in Alaska. I went up to Alaska to do a 5th step with her. She flies down all the time because she works for the airline, so that works for me. I'm very, very close to her. If you're new and you don't want to be here, I can relate to that. I can really relate to that. A friend of mine, his name was Sid. He used to come to this meeting all the time. I think he had, at the time that he told me this, I want to say he had like 12 years. And he said, just give this program a year. And I thought, a year? That is so long. Like, oh my God. I thought he was ludicrous for saying that to me. And then when I got my year, I understood why he said that. Okay, this is going to sound really kooky because this is one of the slogans, but this program works if you work it. It totally does. But you got to, like, do all the stuff. You can't just pick certain suggestions. My sponsor let me know that this is a program of suggestion, but not when it applies to her, because she gives direction and you do it. And so that is just how it goes. You know, I'm not always happily married. That would be abnormal if I was. But my marriage is pretty good. We work really hard at keeping our marriage the way that it is. Our baby is, he's 20 months old now, and he is like, oh my God, it is the greatest thing in the whole entire world. And I never, ever thought it would be this good. I automatically pray when I'm going through something now, and I've been taught that when something's bad or good, to go to a meeting. And I take a lot of things to a group level, or I call another woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. I would definitely say that this program saved my life. I'm really excited that I didn't stutter all over the place when I shared in this meeting. I'm really excited to be here. I'm really thankful that I got to do this tonight. I think I have 5 more minutes, though, huh? Yeah, I think I do. Any questions? No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. It just keeps getting better. Every year has been different, though. Like, the 2nd year was hardcore. Like, I didn't like it at all. This year, half the year was, like, the postpartum thing, and the other half got kind of better, you know? And then my kid, like, he started walking and talking and being really funny, so it's getting better. Now I'm, like, actually entertaining the idea of having another one. What? But, I don't know. Oh, yeah, I can tell you. I've always wanted to be a personal trainer. Always, always, always. And I actually, like, had, you know, a goal when I got sober, and then I got pregnant, and it's kind of hard to train when you're pregnant. And so I don't really retain information very well. I don't know, brain cells or something. Maybe it's, I like to blame it on that. But I've studied for the test a couple times, and there's several tests that you can take to be a personal trainer. And I've studied, and I've not passed the test. And so I'm lucky enough to be enrolled in school to be doing it. And I'm kind of like a visual person. You see it, you can learn it better, and then do it over and over and over again. And so I'm excited because I was at my gym today, and I would love to work at the gym that I work out at. And the director of the personal trainers came up to me, and she said, you know, I thought of you, and I wanted to know if you would like to be an apprentice for the personal trainers here. And I thought, that's the first thing I said was, thank you, God. And she started laughing. And I thought, wow, like, a goal is actually following through. And I know it sounds really corny, but I totally, totally give Alcoholics Anonymous the credit, and God. My higher power is God. You know, it's higher power, God, whatever you want to call him. That's who I believe has helped me through everything. I struggled really hard with the 3rd step and practicing turning it over, because I wanted to see some action. You know, I didn't want it like turning it over. I wanted to see some results like instantly. And it was really hard for me to have faith and trust in God. And I think it's becoming easier the longer I stay sober, if that's any consolation to anybody. The turning it over thing really, really did me in. I don't know. I got like 2 minutes left, and I wanted to thank everybody for being such a good audience and for listening, and for allowing me to be here. And that's it. Thanks.